भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तन्मातरो वेणुरवा त्वरोत्थिता उत्थाप्य दोर्भिः परिरभ्य निर्वरम् स्नेहास्नुतस्तन्यपयक् सुदासवम् मत्वा परं ब्रह्म सुतानपाययन् तन्मातरो वेणुरवा त्वरोत्थिता उत्थाप्य दुर्भिः परिरभ्य निर्वरम् स्नेहास्नुतस्तन्यपयक् सुदासवम् मध्वा परं ब्रह्म सुतानपाययन् तन्मातरः. The mothers of the respective cowherd boys. Venurava. Because of the sounds played on flutes and bugles by the cowherd boys. Twara. Immediately. Utita. Awakened from their respective household duties. Uttapya. Immediately lifted their respective sons. Durbihi. With their two arms. Parirabhya. Embracing. Nirvaram, without feeling any weight. Snehasnuta, which was flowing because of intense love. Stanyapaya, their breast milk. Sudasavam, tasting just like a nectarian beverage. Matva, accepting the milk like that. Param, the supreme. Brahma, Krishna. Sutanapaya, began to feed their respective sons. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles being played by their sons, immediately rose from their household tasks, lifted the boys onto their laps, embraced them with both arms, and began to feed them with their breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love, specifically for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything. But at that time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Parabrahman, and Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. Purport. Although all the elderly gopis knew that Krishna was the son of Mother Yashoda, they still desired, if Krishna had become my son, I would also have taken care of him like Mother Yashoda. This was their inner ambition. Now, in order to please them, Krishna personally took the role of their sons and fulfilled their desire. They enhanced their special love for Krishna by embracing him and feeding him. And Krishna tasted their breast milk just to be like a nectarian beverage. While thus bewildering Brahma, he enjoyed the special transcendental pleasure created by Yoga Maya between all the other mothers and himself. So Krishna expanded these cowherd boys and the calves, but not, we were talking about Maya Arbaka, these other expansions of imitation boys. Not that these boys are some other living entities or some illusion just made of matter and not really alive robots. No, these boys are Krishna himself. What these boys are experiencing, Krishna is experiencing. He's the boys. He's drinking the milk. He's tasting it just like it's a nectarian beverage. That's what the purport says here. Krishna is experiencing, so he's the boys. This way, he allowed the elderly gopis, not elderly, they're not 80 years old, not elderly in that sense. That means that they're not the young girls. They're grown-ups, probably in their late 20s. That's elderly. 20s, 30s, like that, the mothers. The boys are less than 10 years old. The mothers can't be that old. But they're the older gopis. The Prabhupada uses the word elderly. Because they are in the Vatsalya Rasa, not the Madhurya Rasa. This is the difference. It's not really a difference of age. They're all ageless anyway. Difference is different rasa, different mood, different attitude toward Krishna, different relationship with him. The restriction complication of Vatsalya Rasa is that normally a person can only have one set of parents. Literally speaking, God doesn't have any parents. He's unborn. But he lets devotees take the role of his parents. But there's a limit. How many parents can he have? Normally, in one appearance, if he has any parents, he'll have one father and one mother. Krishna had two sets of parents, one set of parents in Mathura, another in Gokula. But even that is about the limit. Others cannot literally become Krishna's mother and father. And then there's also the restriction that normally, the parents of Krishna are eternal associates, Ragatmika Bhaktas. Those who are coming up from the material world through sadhana bhakti, they may want to also follow in that same mood. But they have to follow. A conditioned soul cannot become a Ragatmika Bhakta. He can practice Raganuga Bhakti and follow in the footsteps of the Ragatmika Bhaktas. You cannot become Nanda Maharaj or Mother Yashoda. That position is only one position and it's already filled. But you can also attain a very similar mood of Vatsalya Rasa And Krishna will find a way to let you be his mother. So this is the arrangement that's made. All the elderly gopis want to also be Krishna's mother. Prabhupada phrases it very nicely in this purport. If Krishna had become my son, I would also have taken care of him like Mother Yashoda. They don't want to have a revolution and kick Mother Yashoda out, you know, bring her to court and sue her for a child, you know, not taking care of her child, and then someone else will adopt him. No. That there's no intention of taking her position away. But they somehow wish that they could also serve Krishna like Mother Yashoda serves him. How can they do that? It's impossible. How much milk can Krishna drink? His mother's giving him plenty of milk, so all the other ladies don't get a chance to give him their milk, to be serving in the way that Mother Yashoda is serving him, feeding him, dressing him, putting him to sleep, chastising him when he does something wrong. All these things that the mother does, the other mothers want also. They also want to have Krishna as their son, not just to watch from the side. They want to participate. Devotional service is a participatory sport, not just for watching in the stadium. Watching devotional service, watching or observing the great devotees that we can derive great pleasure from. And that will inspire our devotion. But when our devotion is fully inspired, we want to participate. We don't want to just sit in the bleachers watching the game. So this is the difficulty of Vatsalya Rasa. How do you get a chance to actually participate? To actually be Krishna's mother or father? How many mothers and fathers can he have? So Krishna made this amazing arrangement. He did the impossible. He let so many of the mothers of all these boys, and all the cows, they're cows. They're not even the same species of life. How can they become his mother? But they also have this ambition, the cows. So Krishna arranged that the mothers of all the boys and the mothers of all the calves got to literally serve him to fulfill their Vatsalya ambition and feed their milk to him and take care of him and chastise him and teach him and do all the things that a mother does to the son. For 1 year, Krishna gave himself as the son to all these mothers. Who has ever done that? Whoever did that before and whoever has done it afterwards. Only Krishna did this. Krishna had so many queens in Dwarka, but even as a child he did this. He expanded himself through this mystic feat to give himself to all the ladies who wanted to have him as his son. Putana, even before, when he was just a Trimasikasya. No, that's even before. Before he was 3 months old. When he killed Shakatasura when he was 3 months old. He was even younger than that when he killed Putana. Infant. What can an infant do? What plans can an infant make and plan out? But Krishna, the omniscient, omnipotent Supreme Lord, as an infant in the cradle, he delivered Putana. Not just killed her and gave her liberation, but he fulfilled her parental ambition. He let Putana become his mother. Eternally, she became one of his mothers in Vaikuntha. Fulfilled the ambition. So your relationship with Krishna may have some difficulties, complications. But Krishna can make all arrangements. Now we are having complications, material complications. We have material obstacles to our ambition of becoming Krishna's pure devotees. And therefore, we're obstructed. Our success is delayed. because we still have anarthas to work out. Krishna can work around those also. If we are serious about devotional service, if we are constantly serving the Bhagavat, the book Bhagavat and the devotee Bhagavat, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavat yutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. We can overcome our anarthas by constant service to the Bhagavat, to the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. Then our abhadra, anarthas, the undesirable contamination in the heart, our bad attitudes, our bad behavior, the sins we have done, and the sins we are contemplating to do even now, the offenses that we have committed and that we could commit if we don't control ourselves, these will all be diminished to almost nothing. The reactions of our past misdeeds, our sins and our offenses, they will be cleared out. And our tendency to create more sins and more offenses, that will also be counteracted by constant, regular, daily service to the two Bhagavats. Maybe some subtle traces will remain, but not so much that can disrupt our devotional progress. That's a significant point of achievement in devotional service, where you reach the level where the nonsense you're doing is not serious enough that it can stop your devotional service from progressing onward. Then it's just a matter of time to reach perfection. This is nishta. When you've practically eliminated your anarthas, anartha nivritti followed by nishta. Real devotional service begins with nishta. Devotional service without nishta, without firm conviction, without firm determination and strong faith, is unsteady devotional service, is ineffective devotional service. It can be counteracted, it can be destroyed by material tendencies. When devotional service is nishtita, then nothing can stop it. And in due course of time, it will become perfect. Whereas devotional service before that stage can fail. One can fall down and lose his progress for that lifetime. So this is a very important turning point in devotional service. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. You have achieved, you've struggled through the stage of anartha nivritti. How long does each of these stages take? In the case of someone like Narada Muni, each one takes a few days or a few weeks. In the case of someone like me, each one takes practically a lifetime. Or at least, not each one, but the stage of anartha nivritti could take forever. If you've got a lot of anarthas and you're not very good at giving them up, it can take a long time. There's no time limit. It can go on forever. So this is a great accomplishment when a devotee perseveres and acts the right way and avoids doing the wrong things. And he actually achieves the success of anartha nivritti. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. He's done it. By attentive, faithful, enthusiastic service to the Bhagavats. And he's finally done it. Subtle traces of contamination may remain, but not anything so serious that can stop his progress. Then he's on the stage of nishta. Bhagavad yutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Then devotion for the Supreme Lord that is solid will develop. Not may develop, possibly one chance in 1,000 might develop. It's like I buy a lottery ticket. I might win a crore of rupees. I might. But there's a slim chance. If I have leukemia, I can take chemotherapy and there may be a 50% chance I'll survive. But that's not certain. I have an ambition to preach, to make a certain preaching program. I can try it. It may succeed, it may fail, but there's no certainty. But here there's certainty. If you reach the stage of nishtha, and if you continue without fail in the practice of devotional service, bhakti or bhavati, not maybe, but will, does. It's a demonstrative present tense verb, bhavati. It definitely will develop. Bhakti or bhavati naishtiki. Devotion for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not an easy thing to achieve. We're all hoping and praying for it, dreaming of it, but to actually get it is not easy, as we experience. But by service, serving Krishna is not an easy thing. How do I know what Krishna wants? How can I do what Krishna wants? These are puzzles in our lives. But the means is to serve the body. If you can't easily serve Bhagavan, then you practice serving the Bhagavata. The devotee and the Shastra, serve them. They're easier to serve than Krishna. They're more accessible, they're more tolerant, and they're much more explicit about what they want. You go to the guru and ask him what he wants, he'll tell you. And either you do it or you don't. There's no room for confusion. You can fail to do it, but there's no doubt about what he wants. He lets you know. And if you go to the Bhagavatam will tell you what it wants. You can either do it or not. You can fail to do it, but you can't claim that I didn't understand. Nobody told me what to do. Go to the Bhagavat, the person or the book, they'll tell you what they want. It's just up to you to do it. So this Bhagavata Seva is something we can do much more easily than trying to directly serve Bhagavan. Trying to directly serve Krishna without serving his devotees, without taking shelter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in Kali Yuga, is a vain endeavor. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he traveled around India, he would meet many people who claimed to be Vaishnavas. And he would ask everybody the same question. Under whose direction are you practicing the service of Krishna? Whose direction are you serving under? And if the man would answer, I'm just serving Krishna directly, then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would refuse to take that person seriously. Real devotional service must be done under the direction of the Bhagavat. Otherwise, it's just a superficial show. So, Krishna makes arrangements. If we follow this process of Bhagavata Seva, then Krishna makes arrangements to do the impossible. How can I get a place in Krishna's devotional service, me, where I'm so fallen, who I've wasted so many years already, dressed like a devotee, but doing very little to actually try to serve Krishna? How can I ever hope to somehow, after wasting 30, 40 years, still get a chance to really engage in devotional service? But Krishna can make arrangements even when everything is impossible. Just like he arranged all the ladies with parental ambitions got to have Krishna as their son for 1 year. Similarly, we can be given a place in Krishna's pure, eternal devotional service. There's unlimited places. You can argue Krishna can only have one mother and one father, but he made arrangements otherwise. And you may argue that there's so many devotees at Krishna's feet, there's no room anymore. But Krishna can make it and find plenty of room at his feet for everybody. Whatever rasa you aspire for, not aspire prematurely, but when you actually have the pure desire in the heart, Krishna will make arrangement to fulfill it. Whatever real, whatever honest ambition you have for his service, Krishna can easily fulfill it. But we have to go through this process of anartani vritti and becoming fixed in determined service to Krishna. Then we are guaranteed definitely that our ambitions will be fulfilled. Okay, Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
I remember one from Brihad Bhagavatamrita,
yes,
which says that there are two types of devotees. One is those who are interested in serving, in service, in serving the Lord. And they're the other type, the higher type, which who are interested in just loving Krishna, etc. So how can we understand such differentiation between these two groups? Because kind of the love in itself, loving Krishna, also expresses in service. Like we read descriptions of Srimati Radharani in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the last chapter, which says that Radharani, although there's a description of Lakshmi Devi, which says that although she has a proximity to Krishna, she still the service is the higher. You know, she is interested in serving his lotus feet. You know.
Yes.
So how can we understand such differentiation?
I'm not sure. What's the context? What part of the book is it from?
Once Keshava Bharati Maharaj was reading out.
Okay, because it's hard for me, because I don't remember exactly where it is and what it's aiming at, that statement. But, well, there's two things there. The desire to serve and just the urge to love. The desire to do some service and just the desire to just love Krishna. But they're not mutually exclusive. The higher devotees, the highest devotees experience both. What you have is the immature devotees want to serve Krishna, but they don't feel the love. They haven't developed pure love yet, but they have an ambition to serve Krishna. And they would like to have the love, but they don't have it yet. So I think you have a situation where you have desire to serve without pure love. But if you have pure love, you also automatically are going to also have desire to serve. But that is a higher desire, so it just takes prominence. It's not that the desire to serve goes away. I think that's the contrast. But I'm not sure, because I don't remember the I don't know the context of what you're citing. Madam Mohan,
there's a member of quotation from Prabhupada's Prabhupada on the Bhagavad Gita. I guess it's 10th chapter, 9th or 10th verse of the 10th chapter. And this is there he says exactly what you have just said, just to give a reference, that he says on the initial stages of devotional service, devotee is interested to serve. He's attracted by the service. Yes. But on more advanced stages, he's attracted by loving Krishna.
Yes.
It's there, and I think he goes on to explain it a little bit. But
it doesn't mean just love and stop serving.
Of course. It includes... You were explaining about the stage of Nishta, and I heard an explanation from one devotee who said that what the demarcation line between Anishthita Seva, Anishthita Bhakti, Nishthita Bhakti is our relations with devotees. He explained a little bit about it, but I would like if you could kindly comment on that.
Well, I think you can find the definition of Anishthita Bhakta in the definition of a Majjhima Bhakta. I think that they're equivalent. Ishwade taradineshu badisheshu dvishachucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakkaroti samajjhima. And that is the criterion discussed there, is the criterion of relationships. Not just with devotees, but with everybody. How he deals with everybody. That shows, it's a sign. It's not the essence, it's a tatastha lakshana. An external symptom, but by that symptom you can recognize who is a fixed up devotee, a nishtita bhakta. That he has love for the Lord. Not prema, but he has complete dedication. unequivocal dedication. That's the idea of prema there. Pure sthayi bhava, but that he may not have achieved yet. But he's achieved steady dedication. That he's not going to betray Krishna. He'll always be faithful to Krishna. He may not feel ecstatic love, but he's faithful. So that's the attitude toward Krishna and also toward the spiritual master. And then toward the other tadadineshu, to the other devotees who are subservient to Krishna, he has friendship. He always considers all the devotees to be his friends. You may have disagreement with a friend, but you don't ever want to destroy him. You never consider him your enemy. You work out your differences with friends. You may not always submit to your friends, you may not always agree with them, but you remain friendly. And that should be the attitude toward all the Vaishnavas. That is a fixed up attitude. An Anishtita Bhakta has difficulty with that. He makes enemies among his god brothers. That's Anishtita. Balisheshu, and then you got the innocent, foolish people. He's got to be compassionate to them. He's got to want to preach. Maybe he doesn't have much opportunity to preach, but he has to want to preach, want to deliver them. Maybe you can't deliver it. Even if you spend your whole life preaching, how many people can you deliver? Unless you're uniquely empowered, you may deliver a few people. Even though you'd like to deliver the whole world if you could. But the desire is there. The ambition to save should be there. And then you've got the fourth category, everybody else, those who are envious. You just avoid them. You just ignore them. This is the attitude of Anishtita Bhakta. And if you see that attitude, you can say this must be a fixed up devotee. Because one who is not fixed up in Krishna's service cannot really have these qualifications. He may imitate them. A non-devotee may imitate equanimity. But you can easily test him and see that he doesn't have it. Because we shouldn't go about testing sadhus, devotees, trying to annoy them to see if they get agitated. That's not polite. But we can, if we see a pseudo-devotee or someone who claims to be a saint, it's easy to trip him and show that he doesn't have real equanimity. Okay? I don't know if that's the same point you were talking about. That's how I saw it as equivalent to that.
Which I tried to clarify with you, besides what you have just said, explain if it's true that it's exactly the means for Kanishtha Tikari to become a Madhyama Tikari is his or her relations with devotees. Once he gets that fixed properly, then it kind of like his
definitely.
His definitely. Road towards Madhyamatva is opened.
Yes, I mean, there's different levels of Madhyama Bhakta. There's entry-level Madhyama Bhakta. In order to be a functional member of ISKCON, we have to become at least an entry-level Madhyama Bhakta. We have to live with the devotees and work with them. So we have to be friendly with devotees, otherwise we're not really participating in ISKCON. We're just a thorn in the leg. What people do when they have a thorn in the leg, they pull it out and throw it away. So we don't want to be a thorn in the leg of ISKCON by being unfriendly to the devotees. So you have to, just to be able to really begin the sadhana of ISKCON sadhana, you have to become at least on that level, that you're friendly to the devotees. That's just part of the standard of being a Madhyama Bhakta, but that much we have to have. This is basically a movement for Madhyama Bhakti practice. We're a preaching movement, a movement of living with devotees. If you can't live with devotees, then go be a Babaji somewhere, live in a cave. But if you want to be a member of ISKCON, you got to live with devotees. Okay? Even if you get married, you got to live with your wife and children. You may live off, in the forest somewhere in Oregon, but you still got your family you got to live with, their devotees. Okay. Yes. The mothers of the calves.
So they had also the same desire like the mother of the cowherd boys to
get
Krishna.
I guess so. Although their cows are generally considered to be in Shantaras, but so their Stai Baba, their main rasa is just cow rasa, Shantaras. But there's some mixture of Vatsalya there. And so even that secondary Vatsalya rasa, Krishna reciprocated with that. He became their calves. Special favor. Because he's so grateful to the cows of Vrindavan that he let them become his mothers also.
Another thing. So I cannot understand for this is about. I read in purport of Bhagavad Gita somewhere that it has been mentioned the devotional service of a person or living entity is started at a liberated stage. I mean, at a liberation stage.
Yes.
So we are discussing here the devotee, Madhyamadhikari, Uttamadhikari, and Kanishadhikari.
Where is the point of liberation?
Yeah.
Pretty much this attainment of nishtha, you can identify that with liberation. You know, you can call a devotee liberated when he's become fixed up in devotional service. And even a devotee who's a neophyte and is not fixed up, he's a candidate for liberation. He's tentatively liberated. As long as he stays in the ashram, as long as he stays in the service, he's liberated. If he walks away, then his liberation is taken away. It's like he's got a resident visa, an entry visa. But if he leaves the country, they take it away from him. You know, like that. He can stay as long as he wants, but when he leaves, it's a one entry visa. So we got a single entry visa to liberation. But if we walk away from it, we're not fixed up, and we decide, oh, I don't want it. Then you leave, and it's a single entry. You don't get to enter again. Not on the same visa.
Then what is the meaning of liberation? I mean, if a person is already liberated, then he again come back to this material world? Or?
Okay, liberation should mean no birth, no death. Freedom from the cycle of material existence. But there's actual liberation, and there's also trial period liberation. You can get a practice liberation, where if you keep on practicing right, then you'll be given the real liberation. So real liberation is found at the point of nishtha. Then a devotee will not fall down, and he will achieve perfection. And he'll go back to Godhead and not take birth again. Unless it's for his service, then he might take birth again, but not because he has to. So we can define liberation as not having to take birth and not having to die. We can define it like that. And the one who has achieved the stage of nishtha and devotional service doesn't have to one more time die and that's it. One more death, and no more births, no more deaths, unless you accept it for a special service. You may agree to take birth again just to preach, but you don't have to take birth again.
But I heard one time, especially when the devotees are coming to Krishna consciousness, especially in Bhuvaneswar, when Gauranga Swami Maharaj was present at that time, so I think I have already mentioned this, I already told here, so one devotee's sister, his elder sister, became died. So what happened? She went to his Guru Maharaj, to Gauranga Swami Maharaj, and asked him about his sister. Where did she go? Whether Golok Vrindavan or where? So then Maharaj told him that she went to Swargaloka. So
Swargaloka.
So
yes.
Because she has that desire to achieve Surga.
She had that desire.
Yeah, so when the devotees are coming to Krishna consciousness.
But that's Abhadra. That is anartha. The desire to go to heaven is a material contamination. That desire is a material contamination. That means that that devotee did not give up that contamination and then died, right? And then because the material desire was still there, went to heaven, not to Krishna Loka. Because the abhadra was not nashta, it wasn't destroyed, it was still there, the anartha. Right? Same thing. So that means she wasn't fixed up. She was still too immature in devotional service.
I mean still, she has not a stage of liberation.
Yes. Then she had to take birth in Bhuvaneshwar in Swargaloka and join ISKCON again. But Bhagavata Prabhu has something. Yes.
I have one question.
Yes.
Like what you said about devotional service will start in the liberated state. So there is, I heard that there is one devotee explained, I'm not sure, I just have doubt about this. He explained that actually devotional service is started when we are already liberated, or when a person is already got liberation, then devotional service is started. So what is this, or whatever we doing now, because we are not in liberated souls, not in the liberated state, that's whatever we are doing, so-called devotional service, actually
yes.
Not devotion, but pious activities.
It's devotional service in practice. You see, devotion, the word bhakti has two meanings. There is loving, spontaneous service to Krishna. That is the higher meaning. And bhakti also, the word is also used to refer to the practice of serving Krishna. Because what we're doing is not some material auspicious activity. We're not just doing auspicious rituals. We're not doing karma yoga. You know, because we're going and selling books, because we're sweeping the floor. What we're doing is karma yoga. No, it is bhakti, but it is practicing bhakti. Bhakti in practice. But it's not just because there's not enough words. You know, the dictionary, we ran out of words and we had to use the same word for two different things. No, it's the same thing. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Because the lower bhakti turns into the higher bhakti. It's the cause. It becomes the higher bhakti. If you do devotional practice and you do it right, it will turn into loving service. That's why the same word is used. So what we're doing now is bhakti in the lower sense, practicing. But if we do the practice, practice works when you do it right. You want to learn how to how to lift barbells. You have to, you know, learn how to do it right. Otherwise you'll get a hernia or you'll hit your head, or, you know, it won't work. You have to do the practice the right way. Then it's effective. And you have to do it. Not that, you know, I'm very enthusiastic, I buy the barbells, I spend $2,000 for equipment, I practice for 3 days and then I get bored with it and give it up. No, I have to continue practicing and I have to practice right. But if you do, then you get the result. So if you simply practice devotional service, no matter what material desires you have, no matter what contamination is lurking in your heart, if you do the practice and do it regularly, continue it, and do it the right way, it will turn into pure devotional service. It will turn into the higher bhakti. That's why the same word is used. That's what we're doing. We're practicing, and if we do this practice, we'll develop pure love of Krishna, will awaken in our hearts. Okay, Mother Lohapu and then Bharatram.
Just a short remark, sorry for remarking all the time.
That's okay.
I think it's quite significant that Rupa Goswami, if I'm not mistaken, he describes both practice and perfection as pure devotional services, because he says that purity could be by motivation and by level. If motivation is pure, even though the level is not pure yet,
yes,
that practice is considered to be as pure devotional service, I mean for all intents and purposes,
especially not only because of our motive. Our motive can be suspect. You know, we got nice motives, but we can betray our own motives. For 10 bais, we can sell our motives to the devil. So our motives are not enough support, enough guarantee of our faithfulness. We got good intentions, but Maya comes around and shakes her ankle bells, and we're ready, to give up our good intentions. So what's more important than our good intentions is that we're following pure devotee. Because we're practicing under the direction of the pure devotee who's got pure love for Krishna. Therefore, what we're doing is pure devotional service. And that's, I'm sorry, I'll get to you. But Bart Ram has been waiting. Let me give him a chance first. That is found in the definition of pure devotion at the beginning of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami's own definition. Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam. Practicing in a favorable way the service of Krishna without, free from domination of material motives, that is uttama bhakti. So Rupa Goswami does define, in the most general sense, devotional service is just practicing to serve Krishna favorably. That's adequate definition. And he accepts that as pure devotional service. Okay? Pardon?
Sure. So it's called pure devotion from the beginning. But when exactly does that devotee come under the protection of the internal energy? Like, it said that if a devotee doing devotional service, then he gives up, then the internal energy arranges even in the material energy such that he gets frustrated and then somehow he thinks of... So when exactly does he really come into under the protection of this?
We're being offered the protection from the very beginning. From the first day you accepted a sweet bowl from a devotee, from the first day you heard them chanting Hare Krishna, you began to receive the protection. But you didn't accept it. Just like the city of Bombay decides that you're an important man, and they send you a bodyguard to guard you. Now, 50 most important men in Bombay get their own bodyguard provided by the government. So suppose the city sends you a bodyguard to protect you from people who might attack you. But you ignore the bodyguard, and you tell him, leave me alone, go away. Then the protection has been provided to you, but you don't accept it. So the protection is offered, but until we reach the stage of Nishna, we're not really accepting it. We're not completely accepting it. We're telling it, go away. You know, my dear divine energy, go away. I want to consort with the material energy. So we're denying the protection. When we reach the stage of Nishna, then we've accepted it fully.
I don't really understand, because protection of material energy means like accepting and because
protection is offered, but you have to accept it.
Yes, but when the internal energy is protecting, even though the person gives up devotional service, then the internal energy arranges such that
what happens is the person falls down and suffers.
Yes, so that
but he's not suffering under the under the control of the material energy. He's suffering actually under the control of the spiritual energy.
But how can we understand that person has accepted the protection of the internal energy and then he, at the time of fall down, definitely he would be telling the internal energy, just leave me alone.
Because we see that person, even though he falls down into degradation and tries the best he can to forget Krishna, he can't. He can't lose the taste for devotional service because he had it. Even though he falls down, and he falls down horribly, still, he's got that urge in his heart to be with Krishna's devotees and to be serving Krishna. And someday that urge will bring him back. Because that means that he's still under the protection of the divine energy. Through all his sufferings and all his fall down, it's still the divine energy that's ruling his life. She's watching him in his maya, waiting for him to become ready to come back. So a devotee who ever got the protection and accepted even a little of it, she'll never let go. Even though it seems that she has. We may say, I'm in Maya, I'm in Maya. But you can say that, but it's not true. Yes, there's some effect of the illusory energy on you, but you're actually, beyond that, you're under the protection of the divine energy. you're rebelling against it. Like a little baby in the mother's arms is having a fit, screaming and yelling and you know, as if the end of the world and about to die, and he's kicking and he's biting the mother and kicking her. But the mother's holding him. He's totally under the protection of the mother. And he's got nothing to scream about. But he doesn't know, he's just having a fit. Like that. I'm in Maya! But actually we're in the arms of the divine energy. And we will remain so. Even if we fall down. The fall down is temporary. Okay? I'm sorry, okay, Buggy Ratta had to leave. He had something to... Anything else? Okay, one last thing and then we have to stop. Oh, here's Buggy Ratta. Okay. Buggy Ratta, go.
Can we say that even though for example, someone doing devotional service, but beside of that, they have some intention. For example, many people will see they donate so many things in the temple, but beside that, they have so many anartha. Can we say this is also devotional service, but in the state of lower devotional service?
Well, unless he accepts, someone comes and makes a donation, does something for Krishna. That is some kind of service. But it doesn't become pure devotional service until he's ready to accept the direction of a pure devotee. He just comes in and says, I want to give this to Krishna. I want to do this for the devotees, this for the deities. But he's doing it under his own, by his own whim. It's accepted. It's some kind of service. It's mixed devotional service. But it only becomes pure devotional service when he recognizes, oh, this Vaishnava actually knows Krishna. I should submit to him and take his guidance. Then he can begin devotional service. Then he can begin pure devotional service. Only then, when he accepts the guidance of a pure devotee. Okay? Thank you. And then Pladananapur, then we'll have to stop.
Is Prabhu in connection to the Prabhu's eternal energy when the devotees are coming? So I read in Bhagavatam 10th canto some gopis who did not able to participate in Rasa dance specially. So because it has been mentioned there the Jogamaya, the eternal potency of the Lord did not able to arrange for them, so that they can participate at that residence. So also it has been mentioned at that place that the next residence, before that they got the association of Nitya Siddha Gopis, and so that they did able to participate in forthcoming
yes.
residence. So
yes.
So yes. I mean here that gopis who are the Murisichari, Munichari, so they took birth
yes.
at that time. Krishna also was
yes.
present at that place.
Yes.
So why this Yogamaya did not able to?
No, it's not incapacity of Yogamaya, although that statement may be there. The reason why Yogamaya couldn't do anything is that not that Yogamaya was incapable, but she was not allowed to do anything because they didn't have the adhikar. They didn't have the qualification to join the Rasa dance. Even to be born as a gopi, not all the cowherd girls in Vrindavan get to join the Rasa dance. Only the ones who are qualified, who have absolutely pure dedication to Krishna. Other ones have to practice more, have to become more qualified. So some of these new gopis didn't get to join the Rasa dance. They were kept home. And they had to keep that ambition and become more intensely desirous, so that next time they could join. But not the Yogamaya, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I had a bad day today, I couldn't take care of everybody. That's not a fault of Yogamaya. It is a fault that those gopis weren't ready yet. They had to become more ready. Okay? Thank you. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.